applicable Third Circuit Court of Appeals precedent regarding application of the endorsement test to cases involving public school policies confirms our conclusion regarding its applicability to the instant dispute. In Child Evangelism Fellowship versus Stafford Township School District, the Third Circuit employed the endorsement test in considering whether a public school district would violate the Establishment Clause if it permitted religious groups to access students through a take-home flyer system or a back-to-school night event. Also, in ACLU versus Black Horse Pike Board of Education, the Third Circuit applied the endorsement test in considering a challenge to a school board policy concerning whether prayer would be included in high school graduation ceremonies. In Black Horse Pike, the Third Circuit clearly stated that its duty was to determine whether, under the totality of the circumstances, the challenged practice conveys a message favoring or disfavoring religion. Our next task is to determine how to apply both the endorsement test and the Lemon test to the ID policy. We are in agreement with plaintiffs that the better practice is to treat the endorsement inquiry as a distinct test to be applied separately from and prior to the Lemon test. In recent Third Circuit cases, specifically Free Thought Society versus Chester County, Modrovich, and Child Evangelism, the court adopted the practice of applying both tests. The Third Circuit conducted an endorsement inquiry first and subsequently measured the challenged conduct against Lemon's purpose and effect standards. We will therefore initially analyze the constitutionality of the ID policy under the endorsement test and will then proceed to the Lemon test as it applies to this case. Section E, application of the endorsement test to the ID policy. The endorsement test recognizes that when government transgresses the limits of neutrality and acts in ways that show religious favoritism or sponsorship, it violates the Establishment Clause. As Justice O'Connor first elaborated on this issue, the Establishment Test was a gloss on Lemon that encompassed both the purpose and effect prongs. The central issue in this case is whether the government has endorsed religion by its actions. To answer that question, we must examine both what the government intended to communicate and what message its conduct actually conveyed. The purpose and effect prongs of the Lemon Test represent these two aspects of the meaning of the government's action. As the endorsement test developed through application, it is now primarily a lens through which to view effect, with purpose evidence being relevant to the inquiry derivatively. In Allegheny, the Supreme Court instructed that the word endorsement is not self-defining, and further elaborated that it derives its meaning from other words that the court has found useful over the years in interpreting the Establishment Clause. The endorsement test emanates from the prohibition against government endorsement of religion, and it precludes government from conveying or attempting to convey a message that religion or a particular religious belief is favored or preferred. The test consists of the reviewing court determining what message a challenged governmental policy or enactment conveys to a reasonable, objective observer who knows the policy's language, origins, and legislative history, as well as the history of the community and the broader social and historical context in which the policy arose. In elaborating upon this reasonable observer, the Third Circuit explained in Modrovich that the reasonable observer is an informed citizen who is more knowledgeable than the average passerby. Moreover, in addition to knowing the challenged conduct's history, the observer is deemed able to glean other relevant facts from the face of the policy in light of its context. Knowing the challenged policy's legislative history, the community's history, and the broader social and historical context in which the policy arose, the objective observer thus considers the publicly available evidence relevant to the purpose inquiry, but notably does not do so to ascertain, strictly speaking, what the governmental purpose actually was. Instead, the observer looks to that evidence to ascertain whether the policy in fact conveys a message of endorsement or disapproval of religion, irrespective of what the government might have intended by it. We must now ascertain whether the ID policy in fact conveys a message of endorsement or disapproval of religion, with the reasonable objective observer being the hypothetical construct to consider this issue. As the endorsement test is designed to ascertain the objective meaning of the statement that the district's conduct communicated in the community by focusing on how the members of the listening audience perceive the conduct, two inquiries must be made based upon the circumstances of this case. First, we will consider the message conveyed by the disclaimer to the students who are its intended audience from the perspective of an objective Dover area high school student. At a minimum, the pertinent inquiry is whether an objective observer in the position of a student of the relevant age would perceive official school support for the religious activity in question. We find it incumbent upon the court to additionally judge defendant's conduct from the standpoint of a reasonable, objective adult observer. This conclusion is based in part upon the revelation at trial that a newsletter explaining the ID policy in detail was mailed by the board to every household in the district, as well as the board members' discussion and defense of the curriculum change in public school board meetings and in the media. Section 1. An objective observer would know that ID and teaching about gaps and problems in evolutionary theory are creationist religious strategies that evolved from earlier forms of creationism. The history of the intelligent design movement, hereafter IDM, and the development of the strategy to weaken education of evolution by focusing students on alleged gaps in the theory of evolution is the historical and cultural background against which the Dover School Board acted in adopting the challenged ID policy. As a reasonable observer, whether adult or child, would be aware of this social context in which the ID policy arose, and such context will help reveal the meaning of defendants' actions, it is necessary to trace the history of the IDM. It is essential to our analysis that we now provide a more expansive account of the extensive and complicated federal jurisprudential legal landscape concerning opposition to teaching evolution and its historical origins. As noted, such opposition grew out of a religious tradition, Christian fundamentalism, that began as part of evangelical Protestantism's response to, among other things, Charles Darwin's exposition of the theory of evolution as a scientific explanation for the diversity of species. Subsequently, as the United States Supreme Court explained in Epperson, in an upsurge of fundamentalist religious fervor of the 20s, state legislatures were pushed by religiously motivated groups to adopt laws prohibiting public schools from teaching evolution. Between the 1920s and the early 1960s, anti-evolutionary sentiment based upon a religious social movement resulted in formal legal sanctions to remove evolution from the classroom. As we previously noted, the legal landscape radically changed in 1968 when the Supreme Court struck down Arkansas's statutory prohibition against teaching evolution in Epperson. Although the Arkansas statute at issue did not include direct references to the Book of Genesis or to the fundamentalist view that religion should be protected from science, the Supreme Court concluded that the motivation of the Arkansas law was the same, to suppress the teaching of a theory which it was thought denied the divine creation of man. Post-Epperson, evolution's religious opponents implemented balanced treatment statutes, requiring public school teachers who taught evolution to devote equal time to teaching the biblical view of creation. However, such statutes did not pass constitutional muster under the Establishment Clause. In Daniel, the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals held that by assigning a preferential position for the biblical version of creation over any account of the development of man based on scientific research and reasoning, the challenged statute officially promoted religion in violation of the Establishment Clause. Next, and as stated, religious opponents of evolution began cloaking religious beliefs in scientific-sounding language and then mandating that schools teach the resulting creation science, or scientific creationism, as an alternative to evolution. However, this tactic was likewise unsuccessful under the First Amendment. Fundamentalist organizations were formed to promote the idea that the Book of Genesis was supported by scientific data. The terms creation science and scientific creationism have been adopted by these fundamentalists as descriptive of their study of creation and the origins of man. In 1982, the District Court in McLean reviewed Arkansas's balanced treatment law and evaluated creation science in light of Scopes, Epperson, and the long history of fundamentalism's attack on the scientific theory of evolution, as well as the statute's legislative history and historical context. The court found that creation science organizations were fundamentalist religious entities that considered the introduction of creation science into the public schools part of their ministry. The court in McLean stated that creation science rested on a contrived dualism that recognized only two possible explanations for life, the scientific theory of evolution and biblical creationism, treated the two as mutually exclusive such that one must either accept the literal interpretation of Genesis or else believe in the godless system of evolution, and accordingly viewed any critiques of evolution as evidence that necessarily supported biblical creationism. The court concluded that creation science is simply not science, because it depends upon supernatural intervention which cannot be explained by natural causes or be proven through empirical investigation, and is therefore neither testable nor falsifiable. Accordingly, the United States District Court for the Eastern District of Arkansas deemed creation science as merely biblical creationism in a new guise, and held that Arkansas's balanced treatment statute could have no valid secular purpose or effect, served only to advance religion, and violated the First Amendment. 5 years after McLean was decided, in 1987, the Supreme Court struck down Louisiana's balanced treatment law in Edwards for similar reasons. After a thorough analysis of the history of fundamentalist attacks against evolution, as well as the applicable legislative history, including statements made by the statute's sponsor, and taking the character of organizations advocating for creation science into consideration, the Supreme Court held that the state violated the Establishment Clause by restructuring the science curriculum to conform with a particular religious viewpoint. Among other reasons, the Supreme Court in Edwards concluded that the challenged statute did not serve the legislature's professed purposes of encouraging academic freedom and making the science curriculum more comprehensive by teaching all of the evidence regarding origins of life because the state law already allowed schools to teach any scientific theory which responded to the alleged purpose of academic freedom, and if the legislature really had intended to make science education more comprehensive, it would have encouraged the teaching of all scientific theories about the origins of humankind, rather than permitting schools to forego teaching evolution, but mandating that schools that teach evolution must also teach creation science, an inherently religious view. The Supreme Court further held that the belief that a supernatural creator was responsible for the creation of humankind is a religious viewpoint, and that the act at issue advances a religious doctrine by requiring either the banishment of the theory of evolution from public school classrooms or the presentation of a religious viewpoint that rejects evolution in its entirety. Therefore, as noted, the import of Edwards is that the Supreme Court made national the prohibition against teaching creation science in the public school system. The concept of intelligent design, hereinafter ID, in its current form, came into existence after the Edwards case was decided in 1987. For the reasons that follow, we conclude that the religious nature of ID would be readily apparent to an objective observer, adult or child. We initially note that John Haught, a theologian who testified as an expert witness for plaintiffs and who has written extensively on the subject of evolution and religion, succinctly explained to the court that the argument for ID is not a new scientific argument, but is rather an old religious argument for the existence of God. He traced this argument back to at least Thomas Aquinas in the 13th century, who framed the argument as a syllogism. Wherever complex design exists, there must have been a designer. Nature is complex, therefore nature must have had an intelligent designer. Haught testified that Aquinas was explicit that this intelligent designer everyone understands to be God. The syllogism described by Dr. Haught is essentially the same argument for ID as presented by defense expert witnesses Professors Beha and Minnick, who employ the phrase purposeful arrangement of parts. Dr. Haught testified that this argument for the existence of God was advanced early in the 19th century by Reverend Paley, and defense expert witnesses Beha and Minnick admitted that their argument for ID based on the purposeful arrangement of parts is the same one that Paley made for design. The only apparent difference between the argument made by Paley and the argument for ID, as expressed by defense expert witnesses Beha and Minnick, is that ID's official position does not acknowledge that the designer is God. However, as Dr. Haught testified, anyone familiar with Western religious thought would immediately make the association that the tactically unnamed designer is God, as the description of the designer in Of Pandas and People, here and after Pandas, is a master intellect strongly suggesting a supernatural deity as opposed to any intelligent actor known to exist in the natural world. Moreover, it is notable that both professors Beha and Minnick admitted that their personal view is that the designer is God, and Professor Minnick testified that he understands many leading advocates of ID to believe the designer to be God.